So it's great to be here. I've never talked to a non sort of statistics audience, so I've tried to keep it at a high level. And what I'm going to talk about today is the third time through the order effect, which is wonderfully bookended in this conference by Brian Kenny, who started the preliminary conversation asking about, you know, what did we do? and particularly referring to the World Series last year and Blake Snell and the early hook, if you will, that he received. And was that a good decision or not a good decision? It was actually that event that led me to explore this problem, although I had been thinking about this earlier in a non-rigorous way for some time before that. So the question is the third time through the order actually penalty? I'm going to be writing here. Penalty effect real? And this is work that is done through some of my collaborators through the Wharton Sports Analytics and Business Initiative and the Department of Statistics. So as a background, pitchers' performances are decreases from the first time through the order to the second time through the order and followed by a larger decrease during the third time through the order. That's the historical understanding of the times through the order penalty, where pitchers tend to perform worse the more times they have faced a batter in a game, with a significant fall off the third time through the order. And this was first identified in the book and revisited by Mitch Littman in 2013. But of course, a lot has changed in baseball since 2007, when this was first identified. And there has been some times through the order penalty skepticism. In particular, Rob Arthur writes very recently, strangely, the reasons for the time through the order penalty have not been interrogated as rigorously as they should be. So actually this observation was made right at the time that I was interrogating, although I'm probably more likely to call it investigating, as rigorously, a little bit more rigorously. So in order to do something a little bit more rigorously, I'm gonna have to do some more substantive statistical analysis. So actually very much in the flavor of what we just heard with the singularity and the forecasting, the predicting, I'm going to be building not a predicting model, not a prediction model, but more a classically statistics model where the understanding is on interpretation, confidence intervals, understanding what we're measuring and its inputs. In particular, we're going to try to understand how the times to the order penalty affects what is happening at a plate appearance. So it's very similar to what we just saw, because the essential unit is what happens in a particular plate appearance. Now, we're going to be predicting WOBA, and we're using the classic WOBA as I first defined by, I guess, Tom Tango. And the variables we're going to be using are pitchers, the name of the pitcher, the name of the batter, whether it's a handedness match, whether or not the batter is at the home field, the park, the times through the order, so that's 1, 2, 3, et cetera. The batter faced, so that's the batter sequence order, 1, 2, 3, 4. And obviously these two are highly confounded. If you know the batter order faced, you will know the time through the order. And also the game ID. There's a bunch of other processing we did to get here. We didn't use certain things for certain reasons. One of the reasons why pitch count is a tricky one, because the numbers of pitches that it takes to get through a certain batter very much depends on the kind of game you're having. And so these things are very complicated. But the data comes from RetroSheet, and we're going to be looking at 2010 through 2019, ignoring 2020. And we're only looking at starting pitchers, no relievers. And we'll also limit the analysis to the first three times through the order, just truncating anything beyond that. And plate appearances that include pitchers were excluded, but we still had about 1.18 million plate appearances to work with. You might ask, why WOBA, not slugging, OPS, OBP, or even average? There are trade-offs. Obviously, WOBA is a good number, reflects really what happens at the plate appearance in all its depth. But of course, there are some real statistical disadvantages to using something like WOBA, in particular variance inflation, variance instability. There's something really nice about an average, which is a binomial or an OBP. You can apply variance stabilizing transformations, and you can get probably better and more accurate estimates using those. But I'm going to use the WOBA despite the variance inflation factor. So let's start off by just showing you just a raw binning and averaging. So let's look by year grouping. So I've grouped the historical data into three piles, early, late, and middle, if you will, 2010 to 2013, 2014 to 2016, and 2017. 2019, and red is they're color coded. And basically what you're seeing is as you go through the times to the order, you get higher WOBA. And I've added the averages in. These are just the starters and just the, some limitations. But what you clearly see is about a 15 to 20 point higher WOBA as you on the third time through the order compared to the first. But the second time through the order is actually pretty large. And in fact, while it's statistically a big gap between the third time and the first, the gap between the first and the second and the third might actually not be so big. So we really wanted to explore this, you know, deeply. And I want to start off by pointing out, well, why does binning and averaging not work? One of the reasons why you just can't make a conclusion as to cause by binning and averaging, although it's a useful heuristic, is that there are important confounders. So what are they in baseball that make it hard to determine what might cause an increase in the average in the second or third time through the order? Well, a couple of them. First of all, the third time through the order, particularly in more recent time periods, is dominated by the better pitcher. So a better pitcher is more likely to get deeper into the game than a weaker pitcher. It's also dominated by the better hitters. Now, why would that be? And I'll show you a graph of why that would happen in a second. But the basic idea is that the better hitters dominate the top of the lineup. So we'll keep that in mind, and I'll show you why the third time through the order is dominated by better hitters. But these actually move in opposite directions. So the fact that the third time through the order might be dominated by better pitchers is going an opposite way by the fact that the third time through the order is dominated by the better hitters. But there are actually other factors that you can think about that have to do with this, particularly when a pitcher is having a very good game. They might be more likely to last deeper into the third time through the order than a pitcher who's having a weaker game. So there's all kinds of confounding factors that happen that have to be dealt with. All right, so why do you see better hitters more frequently in the third time through the order? So here's a chart, again, using the colors to indicate, well, these are the levels, indicate the years. So these are the year groupings. And if you look here, I've actually eliminated pitchers. So the ninth batting order and the 18th batting order are highly underrepresented because in the National League, I've just taken out the pitcher battings and also pinch hitters. So you see, basically what you see is that the starting pitcher generally gets fairly far in the game into the first and the second time through the order, but then there's a huge fall off in the frequency of times that they face the bottom of the lineup. So in the third time through the order, the first and second and third positions in the lineup are almost always encountered by the starting pitcher, but the seventh, eighth, and ninth positions in the batting lineup are much more rarely encountered. So the third time through the order is dominated by the better hitters. So naturally, when you've just been an average, you should expect to see a very large or substantially larger WOBA in the third time through the order because of that confounding factor. But as I said before, but you're more likely to have better pitchers lasting deeper into the count. So that could go in the other direction. So you really have to do a careful model to engage all these issues more fully and completely. All right, so that's what we're going to do. All right, so here's a survival plot. I don't know if people are familiar with these things. One of the things that I've learned over this horrible pandemic is that the statistics has become much more part of mainstream conversation. So survival plots, many of you are used to these things. If you looked carefully at the data on the vaccines, I saw these survival plots, but basically this is a graph that tells you how long it is until the pitcher is pulled. And so you see here, this basically goes from 2010 to 2019. And the more quickly the drop, the more likely the pitcher is to be yanked, if you will. And so you notice that back in the 2010, very few pitchers were pulled before the start of the third time through the order. But by the time we got to the last grouping or the 2019, it was much more common. And some of these gaps are really big. So take the middle of the lineup right over here. Back in 2010, it was about 75% likely that a pitcher would face the sixth batter in the order on the third time through. Yet that number had dropped to less than 40% by the time you got to 2019. So what you're clearly seeing is a tendency to pull those pitchers somewhere midway through the third time through the order. Of course, you can even see the opener happening over here as well, where you can see that, or bullpenning, where you can see that tendency that happened only in the last 2 years. of the starting pitcher to be pulled with some frequency, even before the second time through the order begins. All right, so these factors are important. All right, so how am I going to model the data? I'm not going to get into any of the details, but we really investigated lots of different approaches to this. And it's very complicated because you don't want to overfit your data. And I'm not really interested in simply just looking at prediction accuracy. I want to understand the coefficients in my models. I want to understand the functional forms. I want to understand their uncertainties and understand and give a good solid statistical foundation to what I'm deriving from my data. I just don't want to throw it out there and say, hey, look, it's better or worse without saying by how much, whether it's statistically, whether the evidence is statistically strong or whether it can be explained by chance variation. One of the difficulties in modeling data like this is that it is far from independent. And when you're dealing with every regression model under the sun and it assumes that you have simple error structure, we have very complicated error structure, which is why I needed to consider varieties of different models. So empirical Bayes, which is how you deal with the enormous variance on destabilization caused by lots of variances in the number of at-bats for different players and pitchers. Hierarchical Bayes models allow you to kind of do that kind of in aggregate. It's a very wonderful tool that I've used in my official baseball articles that I've written, using hierarchical Bayes models for various things. Like I've done work on fielding and on catcher pitch framing using hierarchical models. Random effects models are simple and easy to implement, or what we call in statistics sometimes variance components models. And this is what you do when you're dealing with predictors that are really random. So you can think of the player or the pitcher that's in a confrontation, a batting confrontation, as random variables, and they have parameters that are drawn from a distribution, and they divide up the uncertainty, and you want to deal with that. Nested random effects models are even just an extension. So if you think about how do I model a player, do I just have a player, or do I have a player at home? And do I have a player at home in different handedness matches, and I want to model them kind of jointly. And lastly, I think of the game as actually also an important random effects feature of modeling baseball. And the idea is that, and this is a great place for future exploration, is that there's a huge variety of variance on a game by game basis. It's as if a pitcher, not really so much in the batters, but in the pitchers. Pitchers roll out differently. Obviously the great pitchers don't. They're always great, but lots of pitchers have enormous game variance, and we'll actually talk about that later. As fixed effects, I thought about home field, the park, the number of batters faced. This is the crucial variable that we'll use to detect time through the order, and the handedness match. All right, so I'm not going to get into the modeling, but basically, just as a overall architecture, we did a two-stage approach, which is first to estimate the WOBA and then residualize the result by subtracting the estimate from the actual values. And then model the residualized values of WOBA against the batter faced or the batter sequence index, not pitch count. We're not using pitch count because pitch count is highly correlated with performance, and therefore it's hard to interpret what you're seeing when you do that. One question that I think I know the answer to, but you'd think that if you're having a bad day, you might see fewer pitchers per batter in the sequence. But actually, when you're having a good day, you strike out more, so you have more batters, more pitches seen per batter, and it's very difficult to do this. So we're just going to use batter sequence as our predictor, and the fixed effects can be done at either stage, and I did it both ways. Now the key research question is to look for what we call a regression discontinuity, meaning that when I do this modeling, do I see a kind of a jump in the regression? So after I've subtracted off and adjusted for all these fixed effects and random effects, and what remains is simply the batter sequence, am I seeing any kind of time through the order penalty? Now I have a blank page here to draw just a quick picture of really what that would look like. So if you think of this as the batting order on the x-axis, batting order, so that would go 1, 2, 3, et cetera, up to say 27. And here would be the residualized WOBA, I'll just call it WOBA. The idea would be is that you kind of have some sort of trend, and then you have a leap when you get to the second, and then another trend, and then another leap. So this would be time through the order. This would be 9, and this would be 18. And then you'd see this jump up this kind of a leap. Maybe this is not a flat line, maybe a curve, but by the bottom line is that you see some kind of discontinuity in the regression. So that's what we were looking for in the analysis. And that would indicate that maybe there's something about the observation of the pitcher that the batter is capitalizing. And so when they go into the second and the third time through the order, they get this advantage in this discrete jump in the regression. All right, so let's take a look at the time through the orders on the residualized basis. So this is not the binning and averaging, but it's the straight time through the order. After doing all the randomized adjustments and the handedness and the home fields and the parks, and what we see is a clear indication of a strong effect. The pitcher is really good in the first time through the order, and then is much worse the second time, and the third time they are by far the worst. So wow, this indeed is a crucial, obviously a time through the order jump in batter quality, if you will, or pitchers are getting worse. I don't know, you think of them as obviously symmetric. So what's going on here? Well, this doesn't answer the question of whether or not there is a regression discontinuity. This only shows that when you bucket, even after residualizing and doing all the statistical modeling that's necessary, you still see a very large time through the order penalty. Or I shouldn't call it that, but just an observation that in the third time through the order, the pitchers are much worse, or the batters are just much better than they are in the first time through the order, and the second somewhat in the middle. But the real question is, and this is the one we set out to answer, is this a regression discontinuity, or is it smooth? And the answer is, amazingly and very obviously, and we spun this 100 different ways, that it's smooth. And basically what this means, and we used a knotted baseline to fit the batting order. So this is the batting order sequence, 1 through 27. And these are the regression confidence bounds. And what we observe, and there's a huge standard error, as you can see from the confidence range. So any curve that you can draw that fits more or less smoothly in this gray region is a acceptable, or is a within a, you might call it a 95% confidence bound. So any smooth function that you can draw inside this graph, so even something that would go down like that, or even go up like that, or flat, or you know, something like that would be a possibility. I can't rule that out. Let me erase this and see the original one. But basically what you're seeing is, to throw out a baseball hypothesis, is the pitcher's pretty good, and then right around here, I don't know whether it's the fifth batter or the sixth batter, something right there, the pitchers are getting worse, or batters are getting better. I don't know. That's one thing I have no way of knowing. You start to see the improvement, and it peaks. It's a high derivative right here, and then it starts to slow down. And it starts to slow down well before. So here's 19. That's the time through the order number 2. And here's the time through the order number 1. So it starts to get bad before the second time through the order. And it's worst as you move through the second time through the order. And by the time you get to the bottom of the second time of the order, before you've started the third time through the order, you see some stability. Now it starts to get really edgy out here, because particularly in the more recent years, you start to get fewer and fewer starting pitcher counts down at the bottom of the order. Hitters don't bat that much, so we get increased variance at the edges. But the lesson seems to be pretty obvious that there's no penalty to the times of the order, but what there is pitchers, or maybe I can't say again, I'm going to have to leave this to the more dedicated baseball analysts. What's happening, I'm not sure, but why it's happening, I'm not sure. But what I am seeing is a clear indication that there's a smooth tendency for the pitcher to get worse as the game goes on, or the batters to get better. Like those are symmetric. But I'll just imagine, I think this makes much more sense. It's the pitchers that are getting tired. And that seems to be what I think is probably the most likely explanation for this effect. But I'll leave that for people to argue about. Here is here's a breakdown by groups. So that was the overall aggregate. I've adjusted for year and put them all on the same scale in the previous graph. But here's now breaking it out. It almost looks like a artistic. I have different colors for different year groupings. And you more or less see the same picture here. I've divided up by AL. This is the AL. This is the NL. They do look a little different. I have extracted the pitchers. So the pitchers aren't here. But you do see in the NL a little bit more than you see in the AL, although the confidence bounds are really wide, this tendency to drop. There seems to be a downward improvement in the pitchers in the very beginning and then a takeoff at the end. And they just keep getting worse in the NL as the game goes on. In the AL, there does seem consistently in all 3 year buckets, a decrease going down. Now, I've adjusted for the pitchers. So it's not like that I'm dealing with the fact that the better pitchers are going the longer stints. I've taken care of that. You're still seeing this decrease. In other words, if the pitcher is surviving deep in the order, maybe they might be doing a little bit better. But look at this confidence interval. They're so damn big. That's not big, too big of a deal of something that just might not be real. Okay. Just to be sort of super fun about that, instead of using the B splines, the continuous functions, which are wonderful in this in their parsimony, let's use an actual discrete batting order marker. And I have confidence intervals rolled on top of it. And I've marked the time through the order. And you exactly see what I saw before. You can see the increased variance is the end. You also do seem to see the drop. This looks like a bit of a drop, although it's hardly something that's large enough to be certainly secure about. You see this massive increase right here in the beginning, and then it starts to slow down as you enter into the third time through the order. So this essentially corroborates what we were seeing before. As I said, almost every turn of this data produces almost the same graphic. Let me go on to this breakdown here. Just now I'm looking at it by individual grouping. So that year grouping. So this is 2010 to 13, 2014 to 2016, 2017, 2019. You see more or less the same thing. There's no regression discontinuity. And I must point out that the fatigue factor seems to be quite noticeably larger in recent years than it was in years past. So this is way back. It's a much smaller and much more glidy trend. This is a much more pronounced and steeper trend that you're seeing in more recent periods. But it's essentially what's clear and convincing, and we have statistical arguments that underpin this, is there's no regression discontinuity. There simply just is a slow general stretchy trend to get worse as the game goes on. All right, so what are the strategy implications to bring this home? Well, take advantage of a fresh pitcher, probably potentially limit pitchers to even shorter outings than you could. The pitchers are most effective during the first six batters faced. Now, I don't know about how this does. This leads to all kinds of problems in resource management. So it may not be a viable strategy. But definitely the classic starter is unless you have a terrific pitcher who you obviously want to get as much value as possible, using openers or starters by committee seems to be supported by this data. Here's something that might be a little controversial and might bear looking into more deeply. Let the high quality pitchers pitch longer, but not too long. So pitchers undergo a low gradualist decline, not an abrupt decline in the third time through the order. And by the way, this is all on average. So individual pitcher variation still matters probably more than anything. But on average, it does seem that there's a gradual decline and not an abrupt decline. So this kind of goes absolutely against the idea of pulling Blake Snell when he was, because if he had already seen any decline, it would have been visible by then. At least it is on average. And there's nothing spectacularly magical that happens at the third time. Where they are at the third time is already well established. Here is something that came out of the analysis, which I really would love to see someone explore more deeply. One thing that we looked at is the variance in the WOBA among the pitchers. So if you assign every pitcher a WOBA parameter and look at their standard deviation, it's about 30 WOBA points. So, you know, for 20 to 80 percentiles of pitchers are 30 points below the average and 30% above the 30 points above. Obviously, the great pitchers are much lower than that. And what that's interesting is that's actually comparable to the intergame standard deviation for a single pitcher. Now, I don't want to get into the details of how we assess this using hierarchical models, but the bottom line is that the intra-game variation for a single pitcher is really quite large. And this is really, I thought, really fundamental and makes a lot of sense for someone who spent their entire life watching baseball. Your number three starter can look, or number four starter can very much look like a horrible scrub or a reasonably star pitcher on any given day. That's really what this is saying, is that, and that somehow you need to use this or take advantage of this. I'm not really sure how that would actually take into effect. But the bottom line is one of the things that I would like to potentially see is a more bimodal distribution of starting pitchers stints. Either pull them much more early than you are, or let them go much later. How that would be implemented is something that needs to be researched. So really, when to pull the starter, consider measures of fatigues and matchups. You might want to look at much more fundamental quality things like velocity, movement, and individual characteristics, rather than that time through the order is definitely a secondary or tertiary thing to think about. And it's much more important to look at the individual pitcher statistics rather than this general finding. So that's one of the strategy implications. Conclusions. So my basic conclusion is, after Snell's removal, his teammate Kiermaier commented, "I don't really care about what numbers say the third time through the order, whatever. There weren't many guys making contact and we wanted them to stay out there." So basically my point is that, contrary to the idea that there's a penalty there, there's no evidence of any regression discontinuity. So there's nothing about the third time through the order that's magical or special. It just is later in the game, and pitchers seem to be worse later in the game. Although batters are better in their third time through the order, the increase is gradual and steady. Starting pitchers are vastly most effective in the first time through the order, with slight indications that they settle in and improve even in the first few plate appearances. Although I will point out, there is one glaring counterexample to all this. That first pitch of the game, when it is put into play, it's a monster. No other first pitch of an at-bat, when put into play, is crushed as badly, even for after controlling for the batter quality. So that's the one. I don't know why pitchers start a game with a fastball down the middle. That seems to be just the dumbest of ideas. Pitcher performance gradually and smoothly worsens, beginning with the bottom third of the order. We attribute this change to potentially pitcher fatigue, although you could argue that it's the batters who are learning and watching and sharing information about the pitcher as the game goes on, rather than just simple experience on a batter-by-batter basis. I'd like to conclude before I take questions. Acknowledgements. This was a corroboration with our Wharton Sports Analytics and Business Initiative. Russ Walters, our data analyst, Michelle Young, our director, collaborators on this project were Gibson, Furrow, and Collins, Michael DeBise, and Russell. And of course, I want to say hi to all my many former and current students who do baseball research and work for MLB Baseball. And this is my first time here at Sabre. They've been here many times before me. I really enjoyed working with all of you and will hope to continue doing so. So that's my presentation. And I guess I'll open it up to questions. Whoa. All right, so there are many here. So let me see where I should start. Am I able to sort out the third time through the order effect for different pitchers? Okay, so are there differences? Absolutely. I looked at some of the individual pitchers and there are very big differences, but they all, on average, they do seem to see that tendency. So there is, of course, individual differences, but there's so much variation game to game that it's hard to make an individual assessment except on the few pitchers from which you know enormous amount. Did you try and account for the schedule? As in, let's say we can assume that a starting pitcher is more fatigued, more fatigue than the dog days of August. I did not account for schedule. So that's something to think about. So thanks for that. Is it fair to interpret the pitchers might have a ceiling that they reach at the beginning of the game and a floor that they reach late in the game? Wonderful potential. Again, causality. Despite our great efforts, causality is one that's very hard to get a solid answer to. Your curve showed that the first time through the order, batters 6 to 9 have a hotter WOBA than batters 1 through 5 on 2TO. The batter 6 and 9 have a higher WOBA. How can that be true? Oh, no, this is adjusted. So it's a good question. It's after adjusting for batter quality. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm estimating their value. Of course, they're horrible. The 5 through 9 is terrible. But I'm looking for the increment or residualized based on what we know about the player and then seeing how well they perform in that situation. We have very little time for more, I was just told. So I will jump to Jim Alpert's question. I wonder if you get a different finding if you focused on particular pitchers, say focused on the top starter for each of the 30 teams. I wonder whether we would. I think that would be a really interesting place to take the analysis. In fact, I actually think that the best analysis would be to do this on an individual pitcher level, but that can really be done only with probably a hierarchical Bayes model and a pretty serious pile of computing. And that could be a sort of a fun high level paper to potentially explore that issue further.